Accession number 8171, reel 22.
Mr. Metalman, reel 22.
I found the countryside, a pleasant countryside, undulating there on knolls of wood, and the camp was, I think, within a park, outside, just outside Aldringham. I never saw anything of Aldringham then, except that we marched through it. And also, there were Germans now standing at the railway station, German ex-prisoners. Kind of reception, not committee, but to help in organizing the lorries and getting us on the lorries. And we were asking them, now, what the hell is happening here? And they, well, they didn't know. They said, well, you got here and you're going to camp. And we said, well, it's... I'm not quite sure now whether it was at the end of 46 or beginning of 47. But we said, well, it's 47 here. What? Well, they said, what? It's got nothing to do with us, has it? He said, arriving here and being taken prisoners by the British, what's going on? Anyway, we had to get on to the lorries and to the camp. Most of the huts were Nissen huts. It was okay. You had your double bunks and nothing to complain, really. Enough blankets, and the food was okay. It just wasn't the same quality as we had had in America. It was a bit of grumbling and moaning. We had been spoiled, and so we thought much more of the Americans because they provided better food and better eiderdowns. We didn't have any here at all. Everything seemed to us very old-fashioned, whether that was now because we just had come from America, but also Germany was more, seemed to me anyway, Germany, forgetting about that, it now had been, the city's been destroyed, but more modern, my general impression, which means neither good nor bad, I don't say it, because I appreciate it when once I got to know the English, some of the, what I thought, old-fashioned stances, attitudes, views of things, I found that rather pleasant. And I also, the British muddle, sometimes more human than the cold German efficiency. There was much I liked in Britain, because otherwise I never would have chosen to stay in this country. I like this country and I like its people. So whatever I say about England, please don't take it as criticism. I wouldn't do that. We got together now. What the hell is going on here? You know, we are now in a camp here. The Americans are gone and we are British prisoners. What is the legal position? What had happened is that in America, throughout the time we were there, we were sorted out. I think officers were on their own and sergeants were on their own, and we were of the lowest ranks. I had reached the Lance Corporal in the German Army, Obergefreiter. That was a higher thing. I got to below a sergeant. And now we newcomers, all the others had been in England. They were had been caught, captured by the English, and well, that was quite all right. The war was over, but they had been captured by the English and they were still in England. Okay, but with us, we thought it was different. So we set up a kind of a... We had learned from the Americans to organize ourselves democratically, which we did. And amongst us low-rank soldiers, I suppose, not wanting to talk about myself, I was one of the best English speakers, or others thought so. And I was chosen with two others, as a representative. We put in some sort of an official complaint through the ordinary channels. We were being told, yes, that we can do that, that we wanted a meeting with the administration, whatever. And this meeting was being convened. We were being told that, don't know how long it lasted, a few days, yes, so-and-so, 10 o'clock in the morning or so, those three representatives, will they please come? All very polite and very, very nice. Come to so-and-so hut or whatever, to administration building, I forgot what it was. We trooped up, and many with us, all our mates. You tell them, and we want to go home here. We don't want to be prisoners of the British. And, we went into a Nissen hut, and there was a large table, and we were sitting in front of a table, and there were some sergeants or so going in and out, and then suddenly three officers arrived, British officers. And we stood up, and they were very polite. One of I remember he had several thick books. I looked at those books. I thought, oh, what's that? They shook hands with us, and pleased to meet you. It was all very nice. But, of course, we didn't want to get too nicely involved. We wanted something solid out of them. We wanted to... them to get their fangs out of us. We wanted to get home. Then we settled down. Right. I think there was some tea offered or what, and gentlemen, they said, or what. Now, who is speaking up? And my mates looked at me and said, ah, you do it, Henry, or what. And, okay. What is your complaint? That was a gist of the thing. And I said, well, our complaint is it's 1947. I think it was 47, or it could have been December 46, that I'm not quite sure. We have been taken prisoners by the Americans. They have taken us to America. The war is over now it wasn't then, 2 years. None of us ever, I think it was none of us, I could honestly say, when we were several thousand, had ever fought against the British. And here we come, you take us prisoners in 47. This is surely, that's enough of a complaint. And one of them said to me, I think it was that one with those books, he said something like, on what do you base your complaint then? Base my complaint, common sense here. You have no right to take us prisoners. He said, you've got to base it on something legal. And I said, yes, Geneva Convention. Now, of course, I had no idea about the Geneva Convention. I've heard about that somehow. And, of course, his masterstroke came then straight away. Okay, which article, which sections? Which section? Of course, I knew absolutely nothing about it. I must have looked a fool. I talked with my mates. I said, have you got any idea? And, of course, they never had heard about it. They were quite surprised, I think, somehow, that I had thought up this Geneva Convention, which was, I think, the best card under the circumstances anyway I could play. And they said, well, you know, this is, you asked for a meeting here, and... we come and we bring our legal advisor even, and you don't even know what you're talking about. Things like that they were saying to us. And then one of them said, and if I may say so, you are just the right one to tell us about human rights and legal Geneva Conventions. I think I brought some human rights, something like that. I it's so long ago. And have you got any more complaints? And no... No, I mean, he thought there were so many little complaints. I think I had forgotten them all by then. Somebody had said something about the food situation in one way or another, and I didn't want to know any more. I said, no. Then we conclude the meeting, and he had just bowled us over, had bowled me over there. What could I do? I came out. We came out, and... there were many were standing around there. What did they say? What has happened? And I said, oh, nothing, you know. And then they were blaming me for letting the side down, for not presenting the case properly. And I remember I got so furious. As well. I thought, do your own stuff next time. Don't ever ask me to do anything again, because I thought it was so unfair. And I'm sure, I was sure then, and I'm sure today, none of them would have succeeded. Because as I saw it then afterwards and see it now, they needed farm workers. And that was, I suppose, the reason why we stayed. Because from there, after a very short time, fortnight, 3 weeks, we were, I'm sorry, sent away in different transport all over the country. And the transport I was then put into, we went by train to Romsey in Hampshire, unloaded and marched to a little camp in the woods in Romsey. Nissen huts, was all quite nice. But we were prisoners, and now we were really disgruntled. We didn't really want to cooperate. On the other hand, what could we do? There was a funny thing. We wanted to go home. And I think it was in Romsey that I got a letter, then post arrived, that I got a letter from my mother. And I wrote back then, and then I got an answer to it. The letters then went, it took 10 days, or hold on, I'm not sure, but went quickly. The communication was re-established, I think, postal communication between England and Germany at that time. So that was the first time that I got any notification. Then there was 47, I'm sure it was 47, not quite. I thought then, well, the war had been over for so long, surely it should have been possible to establish communication with relatives before. Because then, as I found out later, my mother had thought me dead. And she thought I was dead. She didn't know that I was in captivity. And she had been injured in one of the air attacks. And I think together with that broken heart, she was on her own. That helped for her dying. I never saw her again. I must not accuse anyone, but I feel once I had been captured in 45 in March, somehow there should have been a way to, even if no letter goes through, to tell relatives your so-and-so is alive. Because talking about that, I just fleetingly goes into my mind now. I know a friend who lives in England who was a prisoner, was captured by the Russians, and he was in Russian prison camps. And his wife was English, and she had a horrible time in Germany while he was in a Russian prison camp, as you can imagine. But to cut a long story short, it was forbidden at that time in Germany to, during the war, to listen to foreign radio stations. Death penalty was on that. One had to be very, very careful. Now, this friend of mine, as he tells me now, and his wife tells me now, they are in their 70s, he was in a camp the other side of Moscow. And she had two small children and was English. They had married just before the war. And the Gestapo was after her, didn't trust her. She must have been in a terrible state. But she said, a neighbor came one day. This all relates to the story, to telling relatives that their soldier son or whoever is alive. A neighbor came and said, Frau so-and-so, she speaks perfect English now, a perfect German now. Super German, better than I speak English. I have to tell you something, but you must really give me your word, your oath, everything, really, because it's very serious and very important, not to tell anyone. And I know it's difficult, but I would like to tell you. And she said, yes, I. And she said, your husband is alive. She said, how do you know? And he said, well, I listened to Radio Moscow. And it was announced on Radio Moscow. They give names through of all the prisoners. And he said, you know, if this gets out, the Gestapo will have me for that, because they'll get it out of you once you give it away. You can't... they'll have you. And they'll get you into somewhere, and they will force you. You really... And she said to me, it was so difficult, because her husband was presumed dead. Now she had two small children. They thought their father was dead. And not being able to show her joy, tell her children, your father is alive, it's okay. All's over, you'll come back. She couldn't do that. And I just want to compare that with what I thought. And I admit all the horrors we did, and what I know what we did to the Russians, especially to the Russians. We most certainly did not send any information about Russian prisoners to Russia. We certainly did not that. We treated them inhumanely and had no considerations for them. I know we did these crimes, but nevertheless, the Americans, with all the opportunities they had, I feel, and I shouldn't, bitter about that. I think they acted wrongly. However, so we were in Romsey now. From Romsey we went into working camps, working groups, farms, did all sorts of jobs. I quite enjoyed it. The English farmers and English people generally treated us well. I have absolutely no complaint to make there. The opportunity arose, and always liked it, that we could get out of the camp. We could walk. By that time, we were allowed to walk around for a few hours on a Sunday, and not every day, on a Sunday at first. Later on, we were allowed to work, to every day walk around. Had to be back a certain time, but walked around in town in Romsey, and I had the opportunity to go out in a working camp called Hazelhurst. It's somewhere near the village of Corhampton, towards Southampton, towards Bishop Waltham there somewhere. Was a mansion, a beautiful mansion, and there were about 100 prisoners in. There was no barbed wire around there. Beautiful countryside around, the meadows, the fields. We played football there, and that was really lovely. And worked on farms. From there we came to another side camp in Bishop's Waltham. The same applied there. Few Nissen huts. Food was okay, and we worked on farms. That was okay. I liked it. To work on farms, because one had contact with the English people. I liked to talk to people, and people were also interested in talking to me, wanted to know my experiences, my thinking, and I found them very friendly. And I also found them, the Americans were friendly too, but there was a certain brashness about the Americans which always nickled me sometimes. There was a certain arrogance which I thought we had been accused of, and I know we Germans can be arrogant, but I sometimes say Americans had that. I did not find it in England. I found the English people, on the whole, much more pleasant than any other people I know. They're quiet, they can laugh about themselves. These are observations. Bishop's Waltham. Now, at that time, I had looked around. I had a girlfriend, which was great, an English girlfriend, which meant much in my life. Obviously, in those days, English girls, it didn't look very nice to walk around with German prisoners. I understood that. And so it was a little bit, clandestine, only meeting in the dark. And But apart from anything else, a nice human relationship, and also to give you your self-respect back, that you are, after all, a member of the human race, and that there's somebody who shows love to you, personal love. I mean, that hadn't happened to me for years. One has to take into consideration, I was called up when I was just 18, and I was a prisoner till we finally were released in 1948. In 1948, I was 26 years old. I had been a soldier and a prisoner from 18 to 1926, and I think psychologically one must understand that it is really a major part in your whole development. And at that time, during that time, you had absolutely, well, in the beginning when you were in barracks, yes, you had girlfriends, for instance, but once we were in Russia also, you had no relationship with the other sex. You were totally excluded from family life. You lived a rough life. You were, in your actions, you were brutal in so many ways. Also in behavior with each other, you developed a brutal language. You were frustrated all round. And there suddenly, well, I suppose that helped me to love this country, that to look back at it now as I see it. A girlfriend. Later on, I had another girlfriend. She moved away, this one. And to come back to basic human relationship and with it together, my hatred for war, the beginning realization that I had taken part in something which was surely a crime against humanity, and I felt it very much a crime against the Russian people, because most of my soldier experience was in Russia. The fighting in the West or so, that was a sideline, as far as I was concerned, in my military life. A feeling of guilt, not a morose feeling of guilt, but a feeling developed that I wanted to at least understand what I had been involved in. And that it, all this helped me to talk with people, to become friendly, involved with people, also to get into family life. And I don't want to mention names here of English people, obviously not, but I then worked in little groups on farms, and once I was sent to one family on my own who had a large garden. There were two children. The man was an officer, and I don't want to say any more, in a pleasant little village in Hampshire. I could name the place, but it doesn't matter. I don't, to speak about other people is not very nice in this way. A nice English family, and they, apart from working for them, I dug their garden. There were special reasons they couldn't dig the garden. That's why I was going there in the first place. And every morning then, for quite a time, I was being sent there. The lorry took us around through the villages, and I jumped off and went there. And straight away, there was a cup of tea for me, and there was 11 sis. I learned all these things. I played with the children. I worked hard. I wanted to do their garden. You know, wanted to give really much to them, and food rationing still existed, but they sat down with the family for a meal. I always had part of it, and I think, well, I must have taken some from their food. The best human treatment, really. They were very sympathetic. Even when I wrote to my mother was then still alive. They wrote something underneath, greetings, and Henry is fine, and I translated it for my mother. And I still go and see them today from time to time. They are older than I, and the man is very ill. I'm very sad about that. But all these things helped me to love England and also to find my way back to humanity. I wanted to break away from a ghastly past. I found it very difficult because I was very confused. I still had couldn't shake it quite off, this feeling for Germany. Germany was something holy to me. And I couldn't quite tie it up that Germany, my Germany, had done something which was so very wrong. Out of that, of course, I think I learned. I started to read. My English became, in that respect, perfect. I could read English books as well as German books. One of the main lessons I think I learned is that I had obeyed the laws of my country, that I never doubted the thought that I should not carry out an order, however criminal that order was. I felt that having been a Nazi, which means a nationalist, really, in short, that that was perhaps the basis of my taking part in these crimes against humanity. I felt that nationalism was something, to say the least, very restrictive, that I searched for something which encompassed much more than that, the whole of humanity, really. I thought back about my racialist attitudes I had. I made some friends there. Jewish people came to the camp, and I felt so very sorry to say sorry to them, or I apologized what had happened. There were a Jewish family, again I could tell you the name, who came to the camp, and then I got friendly with them. They sometimes invited me. I saw them in Bishop's Waltham. And it all confused me. It all made me think. It was like a great awakening. And I think there I decided there and then, at least for myself, to get myself straight, I wanted to get to the roots of things. In America already, I had started, there was a library in Arizona to read books. It was quite a good library, and I read there the German philosophers. I thought they could give me an explanation. But my feeling in Britain was much deeper. In America, it was more on the surface. Once I came to Britain, I was really determined to find my way out of the morass I had waded in. In America, I started off with philosophers. I read Kant, Schopenhauer, Fichte, Hegel. I went even back to Plato. And I must admit, never having had an occupation coming from the working class, I found it very difficult. There was so much in there which I couldn't quite understand. So that was England. From there we went to a camp in Southampton, went into work places from Southampton, Billings, I think it was. I think there's a place called Billings, north of Southampton. No, not Billings, it's in America. Bittern. Is that Bittern?
Yes, Bittern.
Bittern. Yes, well, anyway, that doesn't matter. From there we were released. Well, that is another little story, which I would like to tell before we actually then came back to Germany.